Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1176 of the Juice Box Podcast. Today's episode will be available without the curse words taken out for Apple Podcast subscribers only. Today, I'll be speaking with Marie, who is the mother of a child with type 1 diabetes. And we're going to talk about her... what are we going to talk about today? Physical altercation with Maria and her ex that took place in front of their child. Okay, well, this is an After Dark. Please remember while you're listening that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. If you have type 1 diabetes or you're the caregiver of someone with type 1, please fill out the survey at t1dexchange.org/juicebox. When you complete the survey, you're helping to support type 1 diabetes research right there from your phone. Check out the Juice Box Podcast private Facebook group that now has 48,000 members in it. Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes on Facebook. Don't forget aura.com/juicebox. Get a free 14-day trial. Keep yourself safe online with Aura. aura.com/juicebox. Today's episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by these three fine companies. First up, Cozy Earth. CozyEarth.com. Use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40%. Cozy Earth is where I get my sheets, my towels, my sweatpants, my t-shirts, all the comfies that I have, all the quality comfies that I have, I should say, come from CozyEarth.com. Use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40%. The pod is also sponsored today by the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter. This is the meter that is on my daughter right now. Wherever she is, she's got this with her. ContourNext.com/juicebox. Actually, I think she's on a beach right now, so none of us are going to be feeling bad for her. But she's got a rock solid meter with her. ContourNext.com/juicebox. Today's episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes, a company that's bringing people together to redefine what it means to live with diabetes. Later in this episode, I'll be speaking with Jalen. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 14. He's 29 now. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story. And then later at the end of this episode, you can hear my entire conversation with Jalen. To hear more stories with Medtronic champions, go to MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or search the hashtag Medtronic Champion on your favorite social media platform.
Hi, my name is Marie. And I have a daughter that is now 6 years old who has type 1 diabetes.
How old was your daughter when she was diagnosed?
She had just turned 3.
Okay. Is there any other type 1 on your family side or on her father's family side?
Nope. None.
How about other autoimmune issues?
Not that I know of. I don't think so.
Celiac, thyroid, nothing like that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So nobody knew what they were doing. How did it present?
It was kind of when my husband and I separated. She went to go stay with my mom for like a week or two while I got everything settled. And my mom started noticing like she's drinking a lot, you know, she's peeing a lot, stuff like that. And she had like a rash, which I later found out was because of like the sugar, you know,
yeah,
through her urine or whatever. So I'm like a little bit of a helicopter mom. So as soon as she got back, I called the pediatrician. I was like, this isn't right. Something's not right. Mm-hmm. She looks skinny. Like she's got circles under her eyes. This is what she's doing. And they basically were like, how fast can you get here?
Really? Well, that's good. Nobody pushed you off like happens. Did she end up with a UTI from that or no?
No.
No.
I was very lucky. Like, she wasn't in DKA. She didn't have any kind of UTI or anything like that. It was besides the emotional aspect, it was kind of a smooth, I guess, diagnosis.
Yeah, medically, yeah. There wasn't a lot of extras. She wasn't even in DKA. Look at you. Congratulations. That's a good catch.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's a thing you didn't think anybody would ever congratulate you on, but that's well done. Arden was on death's door when we figured it out, so... it was, and it remains a thing that you, I feel badly about. Like, even, I mean, God, like 17 years later, like, how did we miss this for so long? Like, we knew something was wrong with her and we were like paying attention to it and everything. We just never put it together. And when we intersected with doctors, you know, the right answers didn't come back. And so it just took longer, but yeah, you got that quick. Plus you were super focused because you were also probably very like heightened, I would imagine, at that point. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. What made you want to come on the podcast?
I feel like my story might be similar to some other people's story of, you know, separation or not being able to really depend on the other person who's supposed to be helping you with half of at least 35% of what's going on when you have a child that has type 1 diabetes.
Yeah. So how long were you married?
6 years.
And did the separation sneak up on you, or was it something you saw coming?
It was definitely coming. It was just not a healthy situation. There was like, you know, he's an alcoholic. And so it was just a lot of buildup. And I just got to the point where there was like a physical altercation in front of my daughter. And I just felt like, you have to start saving money. You have to get yourself out of the situation. And it just kind of, once I felt secure and being able to leave, I just left.
So you made a decision that you were going to leave because of that, everything that led to it, but that kind of pushed you over the edge. And when you think to yourself, I have to save money, how long did it take to accomplish that?
So this was actually right before COVID, you know, so those 6 weeks of being stuck in that house was just every day, like, you got to go, you know? And so it just took me from probably March. And then in mid-September, I just called my mom. I was like, it's happening. I have an apartment. Like, I don't want the kids to be in the middle of this. So I just, you know, will you help me out? And of course, my mom was completely on board because she had been seeing a lot of those things, like, you know, having to stay home all the time, not being able to have people at my house because of fear of what would happen or how he would be or, you know, stuff like that.
So 7 months it took you to collect yourself to get out.
Yeah.
And can you give me some context for how he would be? What does that mean?
Just like very aggressive and, you know, he doesn't know what the point of stop, like, I'm drinking to enjoy myself. I'm drinking to like socialize with friends or, you know, just in a setting or every so often. It was every single day, you know, and it would be like as soon he would start at work and then he would come home from work and he would stay up. You know, he would usually come home around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning just because of he works in a restaurant. He's a manager. And so it would be, I'm home at 3 o'clock in the morning and then I'm staying up until 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning drinking, you know, where I'm like, you need to go to the room. I got to get kids ready for school. And like, you are not okay. And it was just like a daily thing.
Did it start at a certain point or was it when you look back, was he always drinking?
So I think that it just progressively got worse. And at the beginning, it wasn't really that bad. I didn't notice it until I was already like a year down the line in the marriage and it just got increasingly worse and worse and worse and worse, you know.
Are you separated from it long enough now to look at it and wonder, was it anxiety, alcoholism, like stress? Like do you know what kind of facilitated it?
I think that he just is addicted to drinking. He's addicted to alcohol and that's just his vice, you know, maybe like a little bit of escapism.
Okay. Would you call your life like comfortable? Was it difficult? Like taking the drinking out of it, like I'm trying to paint a picture, right?
No, I mean, he has a great job. Mm-hmm. You know, he works really hard. I will never take that away from him.
Yeah.
He's a hard worker. He works in a very high stress environment. So maybe it was a little bit of stress and there's a lot of pressure in that environment and from the people that he works for and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he provided for us. You know, it was never like we're struggling, we can't pay bills, you know, things like that. We had what we needed. It was not bad in that aspect of life.
I don't know how to ask this next question, so I'm going to probably get it wrong. But this episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. And now we're going to hear from Medtronic champion Jalen.
I was going straight into high school, so it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult?
Unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer. So I was going to a brand new school. I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with. So it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist. So I was traveling over an hour to the nearest endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Did you try to explain to people or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I honestly just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college, it's all I see. You know, you can easily search Medtronic champions. You see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that motivates me. I started embracing more, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes.
To hear Jalen's entire conversation, stay till the very end. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox to hear more stories from the Medtronic champion community.
No, you're fine.
Did you feel loved aside of the drinking? Like,
no.
No?
No.
Okay.
No.
Got it. How many kids?
Altogether, we have three, but they're only one is our kid together.
Okay. So you have a baby with somebody else. You have a baby with him. He has a baby with somebody else. He has a baby with you.
Yes.
Got it. Which ones? I was going to say, did you take all three or you couldn't do that, I imagine?
No, I just have my two.
Your two natural children. Okay.
Yes.
So you weren't their like mother?
No, her mom, his other child's mom she's amazing. And she's a great mom.
Gotcha. Did you guys work together in the restaurant?
A long time ago, probably like 12 years ago.
That was
before he was a manager. That's how we met.
That's how you met. Is it, this is kind of weird, but I this comes up a lot on the podcast. Working at a restaurant is kind of a party, right? Like after work?
I think it really just depends. You know, I think a lot of times when you're in the restaurant industry, there is so much stress. And it's kind of like a people pleaser. You're trying to make other people happy. And so a lot of people do go out to unwind after they get done working.
Yeah.
And I think it's just an acceptable thing in that industry.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I'm sorry for all that. That's obviously terrible. Nobody deserves that to be their situation for sure. One last weird question. When you make the decision to leave, but it takes 7 months to collect money and resources, I'm assuming that entire time you don't want him to know this is happening because of what you've mentioned. So are you just pretending? Do you have to keep intimacy going? Like, what is that 7 months like?
There hadn't been intimacy for a long time.
Okay. All right.
So it was not a pretending thing. And we barely saw each other. So it was kind of like strangers passing in the night kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And we didn't sleep in the same room and we hadn't for 3 years since my daughter was born. So it was just, wasn't even about faking it or having to not let him know that something was happening. He was completely oblivious.
Oh, it
didn't. Because he was focused on work and drinking and that was his routine.
Gotcha. Yeah, you didn't have to pretend because he wasn't looking.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Anything about the baby being born that threw him off, or was he like that prior? The podcast is sponsored today by the place where I get my sheets, my towels, some of my clothing, a lot of the things that I stay warm or comfortable with. CozyEarth.com. I'm wearing a pair of Cozy Earth joggers right now. I've recently gotten another pair in a different color. I sleep on Cozy Earth sheets. They are so comfortable and soft and temperate. Temperate meaning I'm never hot or cold, which is really saying something because my wife loves to turn that giant fan on, but they keep me nice and warm without making me like sweaty or moist. You know what I mean? You don't want to be moist while you're sleeping. And then, of course, the waffle towels I use every day to dry off my bits and parts after I've showered. CozyEarth.com. Use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40% off of your entire order. I'm not saying 40% off of one item. I'm saying 40% off of everything you put in the cart. CozyEarth.com. Use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. The Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter is sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box podcast, and it's entirely possible that it is less expensive in cash than you're paying right now for your meter through your insurance company. That's right. If you go to my link, contournext.com/juicebox, you're going to find links to Walmart, Amazon, Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, Kroger, and Meijer. You could be paying more right now through your insurance for your test strips and meter than you would pay through my link for the Contour Next Gen and Contour Next test strips in cash. What am I saying? My link may be cheaper out of your pocket than you're paying right now, even with your insurance. And I don't know what meter you have right now. I can't say that. But what I can say for sure is that the Contour Next Gen meter is accurate. It is reliable, and it is the meter that we've been using for years. ContourNext.com/juicebox. And if you already have a Contour meter and you're buying test strips, doing so through the Juice Box podcast link will help to support the show.
I think he really wanted a son. And I really noticed the difference when we found out that it was going to be a daughter. Mm-hmm. He was disappointed right off the bat. You know, now he loves her more than anything, I'm sure. But that's when I really noticed a change in our relationship and how he kind of interacted.
Interesting.
In the family environment. Yeah.
So the drinking was the entire time you were together? Or yes. It was. So can I ask you, I hope this comes off right. I'm sure it will. Why'd you marry him?
Because it wasn't always that bad. You know, like he's the funny guy. He's got a big heart, you know, just not for me. Okay. And so like, he's the guy that everybody jokes around with and he's, you know, very likable. But I also think that is some of his narcissism and things like that. You know, it's not really fooling people. He's just not always like that.
The drinking was more like socially acceptable and then it just kind of got worse and been worse. And this is not something, yeah. You know, I have to ask you, did the other mom, did she try to tell you before you married him?
No.
No. Well, maybe that would have been nice.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys can start a group and tell the next girl.
I would have been very appreciative if I would have known. But then I wouldn't have my daughter and I would be sad.
Yeah, life's interesting, isn't it? Okay.
It really is.
Yeah. So diabetes comes. I'm going to guess you're on your own dealing with it.
So basically, we were in the hospital because it was like a Thursday. So we ended up being in the hospital until the following Tuesday. And not because there were like medical things going on, but simply just because the doctors weren't in all weekend. And we couldn't be discharged until we sat down with the endocrinologist of the hospital to make sure that we knew everything and, you know, things like that were good. But, you know, he wasn't there. He would show up for 30 minutes, an hour a day, and then leave. And so I was there by myself, you know, learning how to do everything, figuring out numbers, you know, learning how to pre-bolus and having those nights of just being really sad. You know, I remember leaving the hospital to go pick up her prescriptions at Publix and just standing in line, bawling my eyes out because I couldn't fathom the life that she was going to have. And I was alone in it. You know, there wasn't a supporting character that was there to help me. And it was, you know, just trying to figure out how I'm going to figure this out in the long run.
Right. Marie, I make notes while I'm talking to people And do you know the word I wrote down like 35 seconds ago?
No.
I wrote down alone because that's what struck me right away, is that you're already 3 years into this knowledge that he's not really a partner and you're not happy with your relationship for good reasons. And your marriage is a mess. And now there's this next burden on you. That's totally going to be on you because you're already seeing it's not going to be him. And then you're worried about your daughter on top of all that. And that's definitely a feeling of being alone and separated from happiness. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like somebody comes along and cleaves away any chance to be happy and just like moves it off to the side. Like, that's not yours anymore. And you need a person to talk to. And that's time. Did you go to your mom?
I talk to my mom a lot. You know, my mom is a good support system for me, especially during that time. But, you know, she lives 700 miles away, you know, so I'm in this town pretty much by myself. I don't have family here. And it's very much like I don't have people that understand how my life is changing, you know? And so it was just like a culmination of like, I'm finally free of this life that I had been living and the secrets that I had been keeping. And now it was like a glimpse of freedom, you know? And I don't mean to put it that way, but it was, because now you're chained to, you know, we were MDI for a long time. And so just shots and figuring that out. And for a 3-year-old, you know,
it's hard
having to get shots and
No, I remember.
Yep.
Did you move there to be with him? Is that why you're far from your mom?
No, after I finished college, my mom lived here. And I moved here to be closer to her. You know, I lived with her to kind of pay off student loans while I was working. And
then she bugged out. Then she bugged out and left?
No, she got married to this amazing guy who was in the military, and they were stationed in Germany for 3 years. They had just moved back right before she was diagnosed.
No kidding.
And so, but you know, then he was stationed in a different place.
I see. So she moves around a little bit. How old are you?
37.
Okay. Your voice sounds younger. And so it was making me look at you. You're like, ooh, now it's happening. You're very welcome. Which it's, for everybody listening, but honestly, I asked for me because now that you're 37, it's easier on me. I don't even know another way to put that. I have these conversations. I had one recently with a girl who was like 26 and had a baby, and she was like dealing with postpartum and everything. And it was her age was breaking my heart as much as the story was.
Yeah.
So finding out you're 37 alleviates some of my anxiety. So thank you very much. I'm like, no. At least she knows how to get into it. You know what I mean? She's been through a couple rodeos.
To say the least.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, so when do you think you'll date again? 2094 maybe? Because
I don't know. It's been a long time. And I am very much just enjoying living my life for my kids right now. You know,
if I was you, I wouldn't even get a male cat. What do you think of that? I'd be like, no,
oddly enough, I've kept my daughter alive for 3 years with this. And so she's been begging me for a cat, and we just got a little baby kitten. So hopefully I can keep both of them alive.
I'm sure you can. I'm just saying I'd stay away from boys and their stuff until I don't know. I'd vet a guy like he'd feel like he
for
was
a long time.
Oh my God. He'd feel like he was going into the CIA if he was dating me again, if I was you. We've done background checks. We need blood every 3 days. Yeah. Oh my God.
There's an interview process and,
oh, for sure. Yeah. No kidding. It's going to take at least a year to get through this.
Yeah.
Can I ask a weird question? When you were in college and you're young and you're imagining your life, did you think something like this was your lot? Like, did you think you were going in this direction? Like, or does it completely blow your mind that this is your story?
Honestly, and I don't mean to sound like a Debbie Downer or whatever, I have gone through a lot of hardships from a young age. And so sometimes it almost seemed like I would never get out of that. You know, it was just like a cycle of, you know, bad decisions or, you know, losing my brother, or, you know, it just, the hits like kept coming. So it almost seemed like I wasn't ever going to have that like dream life or that dream family or anything like that.
Okay. So it just,
as weird as that sounds.
No, it doesn't sound weird at all, because I mean, listen, I've spoken to a number of people at this point. It's either that's your path, and it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, or it just like a car accident comes out of nowhere. And it's like, I don't know. He was like such a great guy, and he was the captain of the lacrosse team and blah, blah, blah. And then one day, like it goes like one way or the other normally. So I'm sorry, what happened to your brother?
He passed away when he was 20 years old. I was 23.
Oh, that's terrible. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, my gosh.
Yeah, it was very hard.
Do you have other siblings?
Nope.
Oh. Hard for your mom too, I imagine.
Immensely hard for my mom, yes.
Oh, gosh. Well, all right, Marie, hold on. Let's everybody take a breath for a second. Did anything good happen to you the last 3 years we could talk about?
Yeah, I have two amazing kids. They're very smart. They're self-sufficient. You know, I'm blessed with, this is why I won't have a third kid, because a third is going to be a bust for sure. Like, I have great, great kids.
You got lucky in one spot. You're just going to kind of hold on to that. Like, let's not stretch that out. I do understand. Absolutely. That. Yeah, no kidding.
And it's the best part. So, you know.
Yeah, good for you. Okay, so you said she did MDI in the beginning, obviously. How long did that go for?
I want to say it was the summer. We're in 2023. So we did that for over a year and 3 or 4 months, because maybe longer, because we had only been on Omnipod for about 6 or 7 months before we went to the 5. Okay. So it was kind of, we did it for a long time. And that had a lot to do with, like, you know, her dad didn't want her to be on a pump. And I think that was more like, it was just hard for him to figure out how to work it or to go to a class, or, you know, and that's part of his alcoholism and stuff like that. Hmm. But yeah, we did it for a long time.
Does she see him now?
No. She has not. He tried to drive with her drunk in a car, and we had a huge altercation, you know, and so he has a no contact order with her.
Wow, that's something. And alcoholism is really something else, isn't it? Addiction in general, but
it's very, very sad.
Yeah, because there's no way anybody is in their right mind and thinking like, this will be okay. You know, like when you're making a decision like that, you're not the one making the decisions anymore. In this case, I think the alcohol is.
That is the driving force for sure.
Let me say this. I'm sorry that's the case. And at the same time, I'm glad it happened and she's okay. And you were able to like, to kind of separate, because something bad was going to happen at some point. I mean, I don't think being like blackout drunk, watching your 6-year-old and having to give insulin is a recipe for longevity. So,
or success.
Yeah. No, I think that was going to go bad real quickly. So maybe it's nice that, nice is probably the wrong word, but maybe it's good that something happened that allowed you to create that separation there too.
Yeah. That's also sad for her at the same time, because she doesn't get to see her dad.
No, I know. That's what I was thinking too. So. Oh, geez. I don't know. Hopefully that's one hell of a cat you got there.
She's pretty cute. She's pretty cute.
That cat's got a lot to do.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm very blessed, because I do have a great group of friends that have no qualms, no fears about helping me with her, learning everything that they can to support me or to support her, honestly, and take care of her. And so there's always a silver lining, and it's made me build a tremendously amazing community around me and my children. So,
yeah. Listen, I don't know if this is valuable for you or not. You're pretty young still, but my mom, you just laugh because I said you're pretty young still.
Yeah, I feel old.
We all feel old, but you're still pretty young. And I mean, my mom had a hard life. My dad wasn't an alcoholic, but the rest of the story, you know, fits pretty well. And she just passed recently. She was 81. Oh, thank you. And I can tell you that watching her fight through all of that stuff was a gift for my brothers and I. So you'll see. You keep doing the things you're doing, and your daughter will wake up one day a fully fledged adult and look at your old somewhere and be like, that lady was like a tough broad. You know what I mean? And it'll help her. So it'll help her. It'll help her in her own life, and it'll help her with your memory when you're gone and like all that other stuff. I know I'm not killing you yet, but
no,
I think you got a couple more years.
But I gotta be able to get her to 18 at least.
Yeah. I mean, she won't look up and just think like, oh yeah, she did make croissants for us on Fridays. Like, she's going to see somebody who fought through a lot of stuff to help her. And it's going to mean something to her one day. By the way, not right away. She's going to be terrible to you for a number of years.
I already know. I've prepared myself. I already know.
Yeah. On the other side,
told me that you get it back tenfold. So I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah. Now, I used to think that was something when I was younger, and I'd watch like women like kind of snicker when their daughters had kids that were trouble, you know? and now that I'm older, I'm like, yeah, I can see where the satisfaction comes from that. You're like, it's not because you want your kids to have trouble raising their kids. It's because you remember when they were giving you crap. So
that's right.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you moved off of MDI. Well, once he didn't have a say anymore, you were able to go to even that. Like, let's dig into that for a second. What's that like for you to want to make a decision for your daughter's health and to have a person who you know should not have a say in it other than, you know, that he is a sperm donor, basically, and he's got opinions that are counterproductive for her health. But you've got to be in that conversation, and he gets a say. Like, talk about that a little bit.
So I basically made the decision on my own. And this was before he wasn't allowed to see her. And so I took the class. I got her on it. We did our pod of, you know, saline and still doing shots. And I was like, you know, this is going to get better. This is going to get better for both of us, you know? And I remember taking her to her dad's house and dropping her off and sitting in the living room and trying to explain to him, you know, this is how this works. This is all you need to do. And him losing his mind and being like, we're not doing this. I don't want to curse, but you're like, we're not doing this. I'm not doing this. This is not what is the best thing for her. You know, I don't want to do this. And just her sitting there and like, it was sad for both of us because we're both seeing this a little bit of freedom, you know, a little bit of less stress and more consistency in numbers and her feeling better and a little bit more control with those numbers as well. And it was just one of those things that was like, well, listen, you can either get on board or you can, you know, not see her, you know?
Yeah.
And so we kind of did that for a while, but it wasn't very much longer before that wasn't the case anymore.
I'm imagining just the two of you coming into this situation is already tense. You already know this is not a thing that goes well talking to dad, probably.
Yeah.
And you have all this, like, these gains that you've made, right? You've figured things out and they're getting better. And now it's almost like you're going for permission from the last person on earth who should have a say in it. And, you know, and I don't mean, like, I know people could hear that and think, well, he's his father. He has a lot of say. And I'm like, I get that. But I mean, if you're not listening to the circumstances, you know,
yeah,
he's the last person that should have some input. And then it's just defeating. And she's only little, but she understands, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when they're, and I'm sure that you had the same with Arden, like they kind of grow up a little faster than they really should have, sure. You know, and they're around adult conversations with the doctor and talking about things and explaining things to her. You know, I've always been very, I don't sugarcoat things for either of my kids. I try to be as honest with them as I can. I don't lie to them about things. And so she always, since this has happened, has understood more than she should, you know?
Yeah. Alcoholism in his family?
I would say absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Do you worry about it for your kids or for your daughter?
I do, you know, but I also see my mom, who when I was younger was an alcoholic. And after my brother passed away, it was really hard. But you know what? My mom is almost 15 years sober, and it's the best gift that she ever gave to herself. Ultimately, it's the best gift that she ever gave to me, to her grandkids, you know? And so I think that it is possible. And I think that, you know, it scares me for them, but I grew up watching that. And now, you know, I don't like drinking all the time. I'm not one to just sit at my house and drink when there's nobody there or anything like that, you know? So I think that it also helps you to see what you don't want to do.
Right.
Or you don't want to be like.
Yeah, I don't drink, right? And I can't take credit for it. It just isn't a thing I do. It's not a decision I made or didn't make or anything like that. And there's this liquor store at this intersection where I used to live, and you'd get stopped at the red light, and it just felt like cars were streaming in and streaming out, and it just never stopped. And as a person who doesn't drink, you're like, I don't understand, like, why could all these people, like, what are they going to do with all this booze they're buying? Like beer stores, there's people constantly in and out cases of beer, and it doesn't make any sense to me. And then to hear the story about your ex, who it only makes sense to him. You know what I mean? That looks like the sun rising and setting to him. It looks perfect. And you know,
that's his day. Yeah. Buy a 24 pack, drink the whole thing, and then leave to go get more, you know, in the same night. And so that's exactly what it was.
Does it feel like, even though I don't imagine this is what it is, like I'm trying to take both sides here in my head. Like, what if I was an alcoholic? I don't think I would think this, but from your perspective, does it feel like he chose 24 cans of beer over loving you and his daughter?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. I mean,
an active member of a family, you know, going to school functions, even with his daughter, you know, I was the one, you know, waking up and going to school and helping out, you know, and he would sometimes go, but you could tell like he was either really hungover or he was not really there. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm ready to go, you know, it's like
expectations. This is, might seem like it's off the path for a second, but I think we kind of can do our children a disservice by presenting to them that life is going to be like some perfection wrapped in a bow. And when you really get into life, like I just did an interview with Arden. Like I did my third interview with her the other day, and it's not out yet, but we were sitting here talking and she said something like, life's boring. And I was like, what? And she goes, yeah. She's like, you know, you just do the same thing over and over again. And I was like, right. And she wasn't saying it like, woe is me, you know, I'm going to throw myself off a bridge. Like she was just like, she's like, you know, it's not running to softball all the time and 15 friends around you. And every time you look up, you're at a movie or having a party or something like that. Like it's going to school and washing your clothes and making dinner again and again and again. And she's like, it's boring. And I thought, I'm glad she knows that, because if you're expecting everything to feel like mainlining heroin all the time, then when it isn't, you can say, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
And the point is going to the school function or hanging out with your kids or, you know, leaning on you and watching something stupid on television after a long day or something like that. Like that's the point. The point's like human connection. And, and if you don't see that, then it could seem, I can see how life would seem just stark and you'd want to alter yourself because you're constant. If you're not taking joy out of what life really is, then existing in it must be painful. I'm thinking. My son said he's been away for 9 months now. 9 months. He got a job at Christmas last year, but he had to basically move across the country to take this job. The experience was he needed it, and it was really good, so he had to do it. But he moved to a city where he doesn't. Like he knew one person and she moved like 2 weeks after he got there. And so he moved to a place where he didn't know anybody. They moved him up in the company enough that his schedule changed from all the people he came in with. So all the new hires had the same schedule, but they kind of gave him a different job. And so now even the people he sort of knew a little from being hired at the same time with him, he was not on the same schedule with them anymore.
Yeah.
And he's only got to work there for a year, so he's almost done. But he said to me the other day, like he called me and we're FaceTiming and he goes, "What do people do after work?" It felt like a four-year-old asking me a question. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, "I don't understand, like, what is life?" Like, is what it felt like he was saying to me. And because, and the reason he can't figure it out right now is because he's disconnected from people. So he's doing a task. He's coming home. Now, to his credit, he's gone out and found people like in public to play basketball with. And, you know, he's taking care of himself. And like he's doing the right things. But I don't know, that moment, Marie, where he just said, like, "What do people do after work?" I was like, I felt like saying, "I'll be right there. I'll just live with you until you're done with the job and then we can come home." Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm on my way. I'll quit my job. I'll be right there. But it's also really good for him. But it's only good for him because he's handling it well.
Yeah.
Because he could be saying, "What do people do after work?" And then seeing if he can get through a 24 pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't take credit for being either person. Like it's just who you are, I guess, and how you mm-hmm. would react to that situation no matter what. It sucks.
Yeah. It's almost like you have to be stimulated in some way.
Yeah.
Or, you know, have that, like, not high, but, you know, that thing that picks you up.
Yeah.
No, at a certain point.
All the things that people do to busy themselves, smoking, food, drinking, you know, even when you see people go like the other way, they're like, "I'm gonna exercise." But we all know, like, everyone lives in a town where some, like, incredibly skinny person is running 24/7. Like, that's just a person who I think really wants to drink, but doesn't like alcohol. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. They're looking for, I'm not saying you can't go jogging. I'm saying that, like, anything you do to excess is, to me, a sign of you trying to distract yourself, you know, in one way or another.
Or trying to fill the void of something.
Yeah. The only thing that fills the void, in my opinion, is like human connection. So
yeah,
that's all. Anyway,
I can see that.
Yeah. Well,
I can agree.
Oh, okay. sorry. We should talk about diabetes for a second.
No, you're fine.
I know I'm fine, but like people listening might be like, "This is the diabetes podcast I listen to." So, she went to Omnipod Dash. Is that right? Mm-hmm. And how long did you Dash before you went to 5? Cause I heard you say 5 in there.
We went to 5, I think it came out October of last year or August, maybe it was.
I want to say August, September-y, right in there.
Yeah. So we were on Dash from about February of last year until August of last year.
Okay. So you switched to pumping, but as soon as Omnipod 5 was available, you moved to that.
Mm-hmm.
So she's using a Dexcom G6 right now as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you like the algorithm?
Well, honest, I'll be brutally honest.
Yeah.
When we first started, I loved it because I felt like it was tighter. You know, it was had a little bit more control. It was a little bit more aggressive, mm-hmm. which is I'm a watcher. You know, I'm like watching these numbers. I'm trying to figure out how we can get this lower, or, you know, what I did wrong this time so I don't do it wrong the next time. And so I felt, for the first 3 months, it was great. It was awesome. But then it was like at a certain point, it started like letting up little by little, little by little. But she also started school. So it was kind of like days at home with me would be tighter. And then when she was at school, it's also learning those things too. And they're a lot actually more lenient and like letting things go. And I'm calling the nurse, like, "We got to do something about this." And, you know, that's a whole nother episode in itself. But so I liked it at first, and I found myself being the crazy person that resets it because it starts to get too loose for me. Yeah. So we've reset a few times, and it's always great when it first resets. And I think it's because it's going on those base numbers, which are a little more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And then it starts letting up.
Yeah.
And so it's.
Yeah.
It's kind of an in between.
It's tough because, I mean, the algorithms in general, first of all, I mean, what's her A1C?
The last appointment we had, it was a 6.6.
Wow, that's pretty great. Does she have lows very frequently?
So I think that visit we were at a 1% low.
Terrific.
Which was good. And yeah. I was very happy with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because, we talked about Omnipod 5 because you're using it, but I don't think it matters which one you're using. They all work within reason. They work similarly. And you see, it's sometimes some meals spike and they don't do as good of a job as bringing them back as you would like. And they're not perfect, but they're amazing. You know what I mean? Like it's really interesting. For me, it's about sleep. Like, are you sleeping safely and feeling comfortable while you're sleeping? Because that's a big deal. You're only 3 years into it, but trust me, 10 years from now, if you're not sleeping.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That first couple nights, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I slept like through the night. Mm-hmm. What is this? Like, this is amazing.
Yes, it's magic.
yeah, it was. And I like found myself being so refreshed and everyone's like, you're in a great mood. I'm like, I slept 6 hours last night.
In a great mood. My brain is working at over 40%. You don't know. Normally when you're talking to me, I'm shutting off. So, yeah. Oh my
God. I'm sleepwalking with my eyes open. Yeah. Like it's not. But if I could make that number 110 lower, like that target range or that goal right there, I think it would be a lot better. That is a little, I think that gives like a little bit too much leniency for me.
You want it to be a little lower.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So you'd like to see it. So, I was just talking to somebody 2 days ago who's on Control-IQ and, they were talking about how much they love Control-IQ and how well it works and et cetera. And then I said, what's your A1C around like 6.2, 6.3? And she goes, no, it's 5 something. And I said, how are you doing that? She goes, I have all the settings made very aggressive. And I was like, oh, okay. And I thought, oh, she found a way to work within what the system was willing to do. And I don't know if that's like with Omnipod 5, like I would say if you see a spike in a meal, like I would bolus again. Do you know what I mean? Like, you kind of need to keep showing that thing. Like, this is what our total daily insulin is, not,
and this is what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. And
this is what the dose should be.
Right. It's I don't know. It's one of those strange things. I'm not telling you that the algorithms all shouldn't have lower targets and be tuned to doing that. I wish they would. I've said a million times, I don't know why you can't just say, listen, I want to use a beginner, intermediate or pro level, like, just flip a switch in there and say, look, now, like, let's target 90 and be more aggressive. Or I want to target 110, like do that or a higher or lower or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean,
would do 80. That would be my 85 somewhere in there. That would be fine with me.
That's your goal. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if they'll ever get to that or not. Like any of
them. They probably won't.
Yeah. The retail systems, if they'll do that or not.
Yeah.
Still though.
And her doctor is very like, she's a great doctor. Don't get me wrong. They're amazing. I love their office, but they're like, you're at 110 at this time. I think you should go up to 130 and I'll change it while I'm in the office and then I'll go home and change it back.
Oh, she wants the target higher.
She wants it higher, especially at night. And she's like, your daughter is so young that like 110 is cutting it close.
I don't understand
why.
And I'm
like, what are you talking about, lady? I'm good with that.
Why does she think that?
I don't know. But she's also like, if your daughter is 250 at night, don't stay up correcting that. You need to get some sleep. Don't stay up correcting that. I can see where you're correcting that over and over again. And I'm like, I'm not hanging out at 250.
Yeah, she's out of her mind.
That's not okay for me. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, but if you're not sleeping and you're not resting, then you're not good for her. And I was like, I don't care about me. I care about her when she's 24 years old.
Looking
back and being like, my mom didn't take care of me the way that she should have. She did not do everything she could, So I still stay up and do it. And every time we go to the doctor, it's like, let's raise these numbers. Let's make this, like, this is a little borderline, and I just go home and change it back.
Marie, you don't look crazy in the appointment, right? She doesn't think she's saving your life or something. Like, your hair's not going in 6 directions and you're like, hey, everything's fine. Nothing like that.
No, nothing like that. They just know how I am. I'm going to sit there and make sure that, I'm like 180 diagonal arrow. I'm like, nope, let's do it.
I don't know what we're talking
this
about.
This is too much.
Is your doctor married?
I don't know. She's an older lady. and she's, I don't exactly know where she's from. I think she might be German.
How old is she? In her 60s?
I would say, yeah.
Yeah, you might need a younger doctor.
There are no younger doctors in this town.
Gotcha.
I see, honestly, I spend more time with the educational nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I love her. But even she sometimes is like, listen, you're getting a little low at nighttime. Like, she's going to bed when she's 80, and that's not okay. You need to, like, raise that nighttime.
Why is that not okay?
Carb count.
Is she getting lower than 80?
Yeah, but I'm okay as long as she's not under 70. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm fine with that. It doesn't bother me.
You're telling me that you're keeping her blood sugar between 70 and 80 when she's sleeping, and and it's not going lower than that, and the doctor wants you to change that?
Yeah, like, I think last night she got to 93, and then she came right back down and glided on, you know? And so if we had a doctor's appointment this morning, it probably would have been like, that's not, like, I'm not comfortable with that, and you shouldn't be comfortable with that because if something happens, you know?
Oh, those people don't know what they're talking about. Yeah.
It's a little stressful because I'm trying to fix it. I'm the fixer. And they're like, you need to let up the reins a little bit.
I don't understand.
I can't do that.
It's stability is what your goal is. If you're stable at 80, then what's the point? Like, why would we prefer to be stable at 110?
I wouldn't.
Yeah, they're mixing apples and oranges. Like, I don't want you falling, like, below a number and getting low. Like, I'm not saying that. But there's no reason to believe that an 80 is going to fall if your settings are good. They don't know what they're saying. Oh, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, sounds like you're doing fine. I would just,
Trying. I mean, I got breakfast down to a science, so I feel like I've mastered cereal and oatmeal and pancakes, then
you're probably doing anything. Yeah. Just, you know, those penguins from that Madagascar movie where they like just smile and wave, just smile and wave. Just like, oh yeah. I heard you. Thanks. Just, can I get all the prescriptions?
Change it. And I go back. Yeah. I go home and I change it back.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I just need the prescription. There we go. Thank you. I got my prescriptions. I'm out of here. Well, listen, I'm sure they just don't want a crazy low to happen. But I mean, how many times do you have to show them stability at an 80 before they go, this lady seems to know how to accomplish this? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, it was really interesting because there was a point there where I was going in and they're like, well, how do you do this? Like, when she's having pasta, like, because we eat pasta, we eat rice. Like, I'm from Miami. Like, we eat rice in this house.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, well, how do you not have that spike? And I'm like, well, first of all, I cook it and then I cool it off and I microwave it, which breaks it down a little bit. But I'm like really aggressive on that dose. And I'll give her a little bit before she starts eating and then I'll give her more after because I already know what's going to happen,
yeah.
You know? And so they're like, you microwave it? What do you
do? I don't understand. Like, instead of telling you what they think, why aren't they asking you what you think? Because you're the one that appears to know how to do it.
Yeah. Well, they did. They're like, why do you microwave it? And I'm like, it breaks it down a little bit, makes it not have such a hard hit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, and I'm like, I do the same thing for pasta. You know, I cook it, I cool it off, I put it in the microwave. And for some reason, you know, we just don't have that.
Oh, it's not for some reason. Scientific reason why that works.
Yeah.
Did you hear Jessie's episode where she talked about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, glucose goddess, right? Like, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you can, I think, potatoes, a lot of different starches, like cook them, cool them, reheat them. They don't hit you the same way.
Yep. Which is great.
Yeah. Like, you should say, like, you know what? I heard it on a podcast. How is it you don't know about it? like, come on.
So, when we were in the hospital, we had this incredible nurse, and her name was Alex, and I will welcomely use her name because she was incredible. And she just sat me down one night, and she's like, listen, this is the podcast that you need to listen to. This is going to save your life and your daughter's life. This is going to help you. And, you know, she started telling me tricks and, you know, if she wants a treat before bedtime, give her some sugar-free strawberry ice cream with peanut butter. And like, this is how this is going to affect this, you know? And she just was so amazing, but she pointed me straight in the direction of the podcast. Did and she? So our first doctor's appointment, I was like, yeah, like I've been listening to this podcast. And they're like, what? Like, you have to listen to it. Like, what are you talking about? You've got to. So it's like a revelation.
Oh, if she's listening, I really appreciate that. That's wonderful. A revelation.
Her son is type one. So she knew what she was talking about.
Gotcha. Hey, can I get a t-shirt that says the revelation on it? Because I think that would be very funny and appropriate. And
I think you've earned it pretty much.
I'm going to, as soon as I leave this room, go tell my wife that I would like her to refer to me as the revelation from now on.
Yeah. You might get a funny look, but.
Oh, no, I'm not going to get a funny look. She's going to tell me to go f*** myself.
Oh, my gosh.
She's going to say, did someone on that podcast say that to you? Because they don't know you. You're an idiot. And I'm like, okay, I got you.
Like, no, of course not.
Yeah. By the way, this is an After Dark episode, I think, because of all the drinking. I think I'm going to call it After Dark Revelation.
Hey, I'm good with that.
Are you? That's a great name. Okay, good. It's hilarious. Oh, my gosh. Are you okay?
Yeah. I'm fine.
You're fine.
I have moments of stress, but, you know, I try to just roll with it, you know. Because I'm doing it on my own. So there's no other option, but I'm good.
Yeah, that was not convincing at all. Everything's fine. Thank you for asking. It felt like a movie where you're on a bridge and I come up and I'm the cop and I get out of my patrol car and you go, you okay? And you go, yeah, I'm fine.
Absolutely fine.
Everything's okay. You can go about your business.
That's right. Just leave me here.
I don't worry, I almost got it all worked out. But no, I mean, like, do you take time to take care of yourself?
My mom would say no. I go to the gym Monday through Friday, and that hour of time, hour and a half, is my time. And I feel like that is where I really work out a lot of stressors or things that are getting to me, or, you know, that's the time that I would rather spend on myself, because it just clears my mind. Running, it just takes me to this peace level of
good,
a little bit of serenity and like in that moment. Yeah. So that's how I take care of myself. Good.
Oh, that's excellent. By the way, be careful. Some of those gym boys, like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh no. Yeah. I am the only weirdo in Florida right now wearing a hoodie and like sweatpants. And that's how they don't talk to me, because I'm not the cute dress girl with the makeup on.
Good. Let's keep the gym boys away from you.
That's right. We don't need that.
I feel like you have a poor track record, and you will definitely find one who's jacked up on testosterone and something else.
It is a known joke. My picker is broken. Like, I... faulty, completely faulty picker. So there's
damn it, Marie. We can't call it revelations now. It's broken picker. God damn it. You ruined my title. It's okay. I'm actually writing it down in case you're wondering. Broken picker is hilarious. That's your title. There, done. Plus, I realized revelations is a Bible like thing, and maybe people would not think that's funny. Wait, you have a broken picker?
Yes, I'm not good at that.
How do we fix your picker?
Just stay single by myself.
It's really worked out. Well, I've stayed away from guys and nothing's gone wrong. Why don't you go out into the world, pick a guy, and then pick one you would never go with, and then ask the one you would never go with out? That's probably how you should do it.
It seems like a great idea, but, you know,
that one will just be a mess.
In the end, something always happens. Yes, there'll be a serial murderer or something crazy. You know, like the Ted Bundys that are completely normal all over the place, and they're secretly killing people and stuffing them in a
You're in the trunk. You're bound, and you're like that fucking guy on that goddamn podcast.
I knew it.
Try a quiet guy. Now he's getting ready to cut my arm off.
That's exactly right, and
eat it. Right. So, well, there's always, not. I mean, I don't know. It seems like, I also think, look at me, I'm flustered now. Cause I know when my wife leaves me, which has got to happen at some point, when that happens, I'm going to be by myself for sure. Although my daughter's like, my daughter goes, dude, you're such a catch for some lady whose kid has diabetes. She's like, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, they're going to be lining up. No offense to your wife, but like, somebody to help me with this. I don't have to stress on myself.
That's all you want? I can do those things. Don't worry. Let's go. You're going to do the insulin? Oh, man. Oh, yeah, I'm in. Don't worry. It's good.
That's right. That's right.
But no, like, but I also think, like, I called you young earlier, but at the same time, like, it's no joke, right? When you find, when people get into their late 30s, the people left over can sometimes feel like the ones that, like, just couldn't find a match or didn't, like, it feels weird, right? Doesn't it feel like you're, this is going to sound wrong, but doesn't it feel like you're shopping, like, on the, like, the leftover rack?
It's kind of like, these people are single for a reason. And it's not because they're good people or like that they're the catch. They're the ones who people have tried and been like, yeah, that's a no-go.
Does it ever, like, hit you and think, oh, hell, I'm on this rack? 2023
is not where it's at. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But you're also on that rack.
I know. Yeah. And you know why? It's because my picker is broken. And I've spent too many years with people that I shouldn't have been with. I feel like I might have been picked up a long time ago. But instead, I always wanted to be with the fun one and the crazy one. And
Yeah, this is a problem. There's a problem.
That is the problem. That's the problem.
When I was young and my mom was like, you know, somebody's going to love you. You're like, you're so kind and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that's not how girls pick.
No.
I don't think that's how this works. But okay, thanks, mommy.
That's right.
Yeah, and men will, like, talk privately. You've heard guys say, like, just be mean. They like it better, which is obviously ridiculous, but also not. Like, you will attract a certain person just being shitty. And that sucks. But, you know, nobody's looking for me, Marie, who's like, I cut the lawn every week. You know what I mean?
Like, are you kidding me? I would be fine with that. Yeah. I want somebody who's going to be nice to me and treat me good and treat my kids good. And that's all I really care about right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like just being where I have been, focusing on my kids, focusing on, you know, making their life everything that it could be, I would never trade the last 2 years in for anything, because it's made me realize who I am. It's helped me to find out how to be the best mom for them and really just pour everything that I have into them and not into somebody else that will distract me. It's not worth it.
That's excellent. I'm happy for you about that, for sure. I think you just got to find another guy who also has a broken picker, and then you guys will probably be perfect together.
Maybe he exists. Maybe
I got to be honest with you. I don't see why we don't start a dating app right now called Broken Picker. Oh. And it's just people with, like, this story. Like, I always pick the wrong person. I never know which one to pick. And then let the algorithm put them together. I think it really would work. Yeah.
Except for dating apps are the death of society, I feel like.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're older now. You don't have time to go out and, like, you know what I mean? Pump up your calves or whatever girls do. And, like, it's a lot of work. It's like, you're not going out in, like, 4-inch heels again, ever, right?
Never. Meet me on the soccer field, then we'll see what happens. That's how I see it. It's like,
if you think I'm attractive while I'm screaming at a referee, you're going to love me.
That is so true. Okay.
It's hilarious. All right. Well, I really do appreciate you doing this with me. I'm wondering if there's anything we didn't cover that we should have.
I don't know. I feel like we've covered a lot.
I took you all over the place. You did really good.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. I can even feel it sometimes. When people are like, you ask such good questions. And I was like, I bet you people wish I asked two questions in a row that felt like they went together. but I thought this was fascinating.
Okay.
Yeah. And it really is. I think what you said in the beginning is very true. You are not nearly the only person, by the way, man or woman, like, this could happen.
No, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
That this has happened to. I don't know if you're proud of yourself, but you took care of this quickly. I know that doesn't seem like that probably, but you recognized the problem, tried to make it work, assessed it as not fixable, and got the hell out all within a few years. That's pretty cool. You know what I mean? Like, that's good work by you. So
thank you.
Yeah, of course. No, you could have been there 20 years trying to, you know, coming up with excuses and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. I shouldn't talk like this. My wife's going to hear this and be like, yeah, why am I making excuses?
Or, like, stay together for the kids.
Yeah.
It's like,
Yeah, right.
I don't want my kids to think that this is acceptable. Acceptable to treat somebody that way, or acceptable to accept being treated that way.
You have such a harsh example too. Like your situation is, it's over the top. I mean, do you know that? Like, did you have like now that you're away from it, do you see that your life's not the same, like adrenaline fueled, like crazy ride that it used to be? Did you not know it was back then, or did you know?
I was in it. So, I knew and it was, I'm like, oh, it's 2:30. He'll be home soon. Like, this is not good, you know? So it was every day. And that's not to take away from, you know, how hard he worked. And I know that he loves his kids. Mm. I just think that he has to find that balance of, or say to himself, like, I am an alcoholic and I cannot drink, you know? And I think his pride is too much to admit that or to change how he is.
If he was able to do that, if he was able to get sober, would you welcome him back as like her dad and everything?
I mean, he's still her dad. He'll always be her dad, you know? But I mean, that would be my ideal. I want her to have a sober dad, you know? And he can be an amazing dad. And I know that, you know, and it's just, he's got to figure out like which thing is more important to me.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, it's coming up in December when he'll be able to see her again. And my anxiety is like all over the place because I don't know what that's going to look like because I've been in control of this situation. At that point, it'll be a year and 8 months, you know? So it's, I hope that he's getting it together and doing the things that he needs to do and that the court recommended that he does so that he can have a relationship with her. That would be ideal.
Yeah, of course. Do you not know if those things are happening or not? Do you have no contact?
No, he has no contact with me or her because of the situation happened.
So he could be sober right now and you wouldn't know it.
I wouldn't know it. I pray that he is. You know, I want that for my daughter.
A year and 8 months, huh? So. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly he's going to be back again and you're worried he's going to be that same person or worse. That's terrible.
Well, he's very resentful. And so I just know that it's going to be a rocky situation, at least for a while. So,
yeah, that sucks. I'm sorry for you. I am. I hope it is the best outcome it can be. And if it's not, I hope you continue to handle it the way you've been because you're doing a great job.
Yeah. Thank you. No, I appreciate that.
Of course. It's sincere. I mean, I've only talked to you for an hour, but you know, you're very together and thoughtful about this.
Thank you.
Yeah. Unless you're hiding something. Are you hiding anything? Tell me no.
No.
Okay. Can you imagine?
I try not.
You told me so many things about your life. If you were hiding something, like I don't know what it could be.
That's right. Maybe I'm the serial murderer. I was gonna say, never know.
You've got people locked in the basement, maybe. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, Marie, thank you so much. Can you hold on for a second for me?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks. Arden started using a contour meter because of its accuracy, but she continues to use it because it's durable and trustworthy. If you have diabetes, you want the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter. There's already so many decisions. Let me take this one off your plate. ContourNext.com/juicebox. Huge thanks to Cozy Earth for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast. CozyEarth.com. Use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40% off of your entire order. Jalen is an incredible example of what so many experience living with diabetes. You show up for yourself and others every day, never letting diabetes define you. And that is what the Medtronic Champion community is all about. Each of us is strong, and together, we're even stronger. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community, or to share your own story, visit MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox and look out online for the hashtag Medtronic Champion. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy my full conversation with Jalen coming up in just a moment. If you're living with type 1 diabetes, the After Dark collection from the Juice Box podcast is the only place to hear the stories that no one else talks about. From drugs to depression, self-harm, trauma, addiction, and so much more. Go to juiceboxpodcast.com, up in the menu, and click on After Dark. There you'll see a full list of all of the After Dark episodes. Thanks for hanging out until the end. Now you're going to hear my entire conversation with Jalen. Don't forget MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or the hashtag MedtronicChampion on your favorite social media platform.
My name is Jalen Mayfield. I am 29 years old. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I am originally from Waynesboro, Mississippi. So I've kind of traveled all over. I've just landed here in the Midwest and haven't left since.
Nice. How old were you when you were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes?
I was 14 years old when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
15 years ago. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. 14 years old. What are you like? Do you remember what grade you were in?
I actually do, because we have like an eighth grade promotion. So I had just had eighth grade promotion. So I was going straight into high school. So it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult going into high school with this new thing?
It was unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer. So I was going to a brand new school with, you know, our community. We brought three different schools together. So I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with. So it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was.
Did you even know, or were you just learning at the same time?
I honestly was learning at the same time. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist. So I was traveling almost over an hour to the nearest, you know, pediatrician, like endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Was there any expectation of diabetes? Does somebody else in your family have type 1?
No, I was the first one to have type 1 in my family.
And do you have children now?
I do not.
No. Do you think you will one day?
Still thinking about it, but right now I've just been traveling, focusing on my career and myself. So,
what do you do? What's your career?
Yeah, so I am a marketing leasing specialist for a student housing company. So we oversee about 90 properties throughout the U.S. So I've been working for them for about 8 years now.
And you get to travel a lot in that job?
Yes, I experience a lot of travel. It's fun, but also difficult, especially with all your type 1 diabetes supplies and all your electronics. So it's a bit of a hassle sometimes. Mm-hmm.
What do you find that you absolutely need with you while you're traveling, diabetes-wise?
I have learned my biggest thing I need is some type of glucose. I have experienced lows, whether that's on a flight, traveling, walking through the airport. And I used to always experience just being nervous to ask for some type of snack or anything. So I felt like I needed to always have something on me, and that has made it my travel a lot easier.
Okay. So growing up in this small town, what was your initial challenge during diagnosis, and what other challenges did you find along the way?
Yeah, I think the initial one, I felt isolated. I had no one to talk to that it was experiencing what I was going through. You know, people would say, oh, I know this is like hard for you, but I was like, you really don't. Like, I just felt lonely. I didn't know, you know, people were watching everything I did. It was like, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. I felt like all of my childhood had been, you know, I don't even remember what it was like for a life before diabetes at this point, because I felt like that's only thing I could focus on was trying to do a life with type 1 diabetes.
When you found yourself misunderstood, did you try to explain to people, or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I honestly just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just, you know, kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it unless I absolutely had to.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I think I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college and moving to an even bigger town, that's where I finally found those people where I was like, okay, there's a lot of other people that have type 1 diabetes. And, you know, there's a community out there which I had never experienced before.
Is college where you met somebody with diabetes for the first time, or just where you met more people with different ways of thinking?
So I met my first person with diabetes, actually my freshman year of high school. There was only one other person, and he had had it since he was a kid, like young, since we were like maybe born, mm-hmm. or like right after that time frame. So that was the only other person I knew until I got to college and I started meeting other people. I was a member of the band and I was an RA. So I was like, okay, there's a small handful of people also at my university. But then once I moved to St. Louis, and a lot of my friends I met were like med students and they were young professionals. And that's where I started really getting involved with one of my really close friends to this day. He was also type 1 diabetic. And I was like, that's who introduced me to all these different types of communities and technologies, and which is really what helped jumpstart my learning more in with type 1 diabetes.
Do you think, I mean, there was that one person in high school, but you were young. Do you really think you were ready to build a relationship and around diabetes, or did you even know the reason why that would be important at the time?
I didn't. You know, I honestly didn't think about it. I just was like, oh, there's another person in my class that's kind of going through the same thing as I am, but they've also had it a lot longer than I have. So they kind of got it down. They don't really talk about it. And I was like, well, I don't really have much to connect with them. Connect with them on.
Yeah, no. So now once your world expands, as far as different people, different backgrounds, different places in college, you see the need to connect in real life, but there's still only a few people, but there's still value in that, right?
Correct.
What do you think that value was at the time?
I think it was just what making me feel like I was just a normal person. I just wanted that. And I needed to know that, like, you know, there was other people out there with type 1 diabetes experiencing the same type of, you know, thoughts that I was having.
When were you first introduced to the Medtronic Champions community?
Yeah. So about 2 years ago, I was, you know, I was looking around and I stumbled upon the Medtronic community. And I was like, this is something I really, really, I kind of need. You know, I said, all throughout these years, I was, you know, afraid to show my pump. I would wear long sleeves, like didn't want people to see my CGMs because I didn't want people to ask me questions. And, you know, I just felt so uncomfortable. And then I noticed seeing these people really in the Medtronic community just, they embraced it. You could see them. They weren't afraid to show it. And that was something I was really looking forward to.
How is it knowing that your diabetes technology is such an important part of your health and your care and having to hide it? What did it feel like to have to hide that diabetes technology? And how did it feel to be able to kind of let it go?
I refused to go anywhere. I would run to the bathroom. I just didn't want to do it in public because I felt like people were watching me. And that was just one of the hardest things I was trying to overcome. You know, I was fresh out of college, going into the young professional world. So, you know, going out on work events and things like that, I just didn't think to have it out because I was so afraid. But then once I did start, you know, embracing it and showing it, that's when the curiosity came. And it was actually genuine questions and people wanting to know more about the equipment that I'm on and how does this work and what does this mean? And things like that, which it kind of inspired me because I was like, okay, people actually do want to understand what I'm experiencing with type 1 diabetes.
What did you experience when the internet came into play? And now suddenly as easy as a hashtag and you can meet all these other people who are living with diabetes as well. Can you tell me how that is either different or valuable, I guess, compared to meeting a few people in real life?
Absolutely. I think if you look back from when I was first diagnosed to now, I would have never thought of, like, you know, searching anything for someone with type 1 diabetes. And now it's like, it's all I see. You know, you can easily search Medtronic Champions and you see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that kind of just motivates me, and which is how I've kind of came out of my shell and started embracing more and posting more on my social media with about, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes. And I think that's something that I hope can inspire everyone else.
What was it like having more personal, intimate relationships in college with type 1?
I think it was kind of hard to explain, you know, just for example, like no one really understands like what a low is. And I think that was a very hard thing for me to explain. Like it can happen in any moment and I'm sweating. I'm just really like not all there. And I'm trying to explain like, hey, this is what's going on. I need your help. And I think that was something that was hard for me to, you know, I did talk to people about it. So when this happened, they were like, oh, you know, what's going on with you? I'm like, I'm actually a type 1 diabetic. Yeah. This is what's going on. I need your help.
What about once you've had an experience like that in front of someone, was it always bonding or did it ever have people kind of step back and be maybe more, I don't know, leery of your relationship?
After I would tell someone I had type 1 diabetes after some type of event or anything, like they were kind of more upset with me that I didn't tell them up front. because they were like, you know, I care about you as a person. I would have loved to known this about you. It's not anything you should have to hide from me. And I think that was a lot of the realization that I was going through with a lot of people.
Okay. Let me ask you this. So now we talked about what it was like to be low and to have that more kind of emergent situation. But what about when your blood sugar has been high or stubborn and you're not thinking correctly, but it's not as obvious maybe to you or to them?
Yeah. So I go through my same experiences when I have high blood sugars. You know, I can tell, like, from my coworkers, for example, I didn't really talk to, you know, when I go, I'll backtrack. When I visit multiple sites for work, I usually don't announce it. And so sometimes I'm working throughout the day. I might have snacked, forgot to take some insulin, and my blood sugar is running high. And I'm a little bit more irritable. I'm all over the place. And I'm like, let me stop. Hey, guys, I need to like take some insulin. I'm sorry. I didn't tell you guys I'm a diabetic. So you may be wondering why I'm kind of just a little bit snippy, you know? So I like to make sure I do that now going forward, because that's something I noticed and it was kind of hindering me with my career, because I was, you know, getting irritable because I'm working nonstop and I'm forgetting to take a step back and focus on my diabetes.
Right. Hey, with the advent of new technology like Medtronic CGM and other diabetes technology, can you tell me how that's improved your life and those interactions with people?
Yeah, I can. I feel confident knowing that it's working in the background. As someone, and I've always adamantly said it, I have been someone that's really bad with counting my carbs. So sometimes I kind of undershoot it because I'm scared, but it allows me to just know that, hey, it's got my back if I forget something. And I think that allows me to have a quick lunch, and then I'm able to get back into the work day because it's such a fast paced industry that I work in. So sometimes it is easy to forget. And so I love that I have that system that's keeping track of everything for me.
Let me ask you one last question. When you have interactions online with other people who have type 1 diabetes, what social media do you find the most valuable for you personally? Like, what platforms do you see the most people and have the most good interactions on?
Yeah, I've had tremendous interactions on Instagram. That's where I've kind of seen a lot of other diabetics reach out to me and ask me questions. I've commented and been like, hey, you're experiencing this too. But I've recently also been seeing TikToks and, you know, finding on that side of it, I didn't, you know, see the videos and the fun videos. And I'm like, I would love to do stuff like that, but I just never have the courage. So I'm seeing people make like just the fun engagement videos now, which I love, you know, really bringing that awareness to diabetes.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? Maybe you don't know this, but there's some sort of an age cutoff somewhere where there is an entire world of people with type 1 diabetes existing on Facebook mm-hmm. that don't go into TikTok or Instagram and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I do think it's pretty broken down by, you know, when that platform was most popular for those people by age. But your younger people, I'm acting like I'm 100 years old, but younger people seem to enjoy video more.
Yes. I think it's just because it's something you see. And so it's like, and I think the one thing, and obviously it's a big stereotype around diabetes, is you don't look like you have diabetes. And that's something I always faced. And so when I see other people that are just, you know, normal everyday people, and I'm like, they have type 1 diabetes just like me. They're literally living their life, having fun. That's just something you want to see it, because you don't get to see people living their everyday lives with diabetes. And I think that's something I've really enjoyed.
Yeah. What are your health goals? When you go to the endocrinologist and you make a plan for the next few months, what are you hoping to achieve, and where do you struggle and where do you see your successes?
I'll be honest, I was not someone who was as, you know, involved in my diabetes. I wasn't really focused on my health. And that was something that, you know, you go into an endocrinologist and you get these results back and it's not what you want to hear. It makes you nervous. It makes you scared. And so I personally, for myself, you know, I was like, this is my chance to change. I know there's people that are living just like me, everyday lives, and they can keep their A1Cs and their blood sugars under control. How can I do this? So I go in with, you know, I would like to see it down a certain number of points each time. I would love for my doctor to be like, hey, I see you're entering your carbs. I see you're, you know, you're not having lows. You're not running high too often. That's my goal. And I've been seeing that. And that's what motivates me every time I go to the endocrinologist, where I don't dread going. It's like an exciting visit for me.
So you like to set a goal for yourself and then for someone to acknowledge it, to give you kind of that energy to keep going for the next goal.
Yeah, I feel as a type 1 diabetic, for me, and it's just, it's a lot to balance. It's a hard our journey.
Yeah.
And so I want someone, when I go in, I want to be able to know, like, hey, I see what you're doing. Let's work together to do this. Let's, you don't want to be put down, like, you know, you're doing horrible. You're doing, it's just, it's not going to motivate you because it's, you're already fighting a tough battle.
Right.
So just having that motivation and acknowledging the goods and also how we can improve, that's what really has been the game changer for me in the past 2 years.
Jalen, I appreciate you spending this time with me. This was terrific. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
If you enjoyed Jalen's story, check out medtronicdiabetes.com/juicebox. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. wrongwayrecording.com.